Hi, I'm Andrew Connell. In this screencast, we're going to look at a deep dive into the Office 365 API for contacts. Before we begin, let's look at the developer vision for the Office 365 development. It boils down to both users and data. What do I mean by users? Users want to be able to work with their devices and interact with all of their information using custom applications or some of the applications that have been provided by Microsoft, such as the Office clients as Word, Excel, Outlook, and PowerPoint, as well as custom applications that developers build. They want to work with them in a familiar environment with familiar user interfaces. For developers, we want to be able to build custom applications using a multitude of different platforms, from working in a mobile experience to working off a server-side product, something that's working on the desktop, or even just a standard web page. We want to be able to get to all of our data and provide these really good experiences for our users. We're going to first take a look at an overview of the API, look at connected services, paging support, batching support, create, update, and delete support, and other exchange operations that we can take advantage of using REST. Let's first do an overview of the Office 365 API for calendar, contacts, and mail. Office 365 APIs provide multiple endpoints for us doing different things inside of Exchange. For example, working with mail, calendars, and contacts. The Office 365 APIs are accessible through REST. You can get to them via outlook.office365.com/api/v1.0. And then you can get to all of your information by going /me and then /contacts. The Office 365 APIs are accessible through an object in the .NET SDK for the Office 365 APIs called the Outlook Services Client. This is a library that extracts away a lot of the sending and receiving of REST requests within .NET projects. Some of the common API operations that you'll want to do with the contacts in a mailbox are creating contacts, deleting contacts, and editing contacts. Let's talk a little bit about connected services. A connected service is something you're going to add inside of your project in Visual Studio to make it easy to build your application both with Azure Active Directory and with the .NET SDK for Office 365. What you'll do is you'll select the project, right-click and select Add Connected Service, and then you're going to register your app. When you register your app, it's registering it inside of an Azure Active Directory directory associated with your Office 365 tenant to access things such as Office 365 services, including mail, calendar, and contacts. Once you've created the application, you then have to go in and grant it permissions. For example, for contacts, you're going to want to be able to grant it access to things like your calendar contact or your contacts. Or maybe just read your contacts or have full access to them if you want to write to them. Each different service in the Office 365 API is going to give you a different option of what you can select. Once you've gone through the connected service wizard, you're going to see a few things added to your project. You'll have three assemblies that are added to your project with the connected service wizard: Microsoft.office365.oauth, .oauth.web, and .outlook services or exchange. You're also going to get some app settings that will be added to your web config with the connected service wizard. Now, what these are going to be information about your application, like the client ID, password, the authorization URI, and the redirect URI. The code snippet you see here is what you're going to use to create a Outlook services client. At the top, you see we're going to go get some information off the current claims for the current user, and then also go build up a contact endpoint for our application. So you see here that I'm creating a client credential at the top, passing in the client ID and secret from my web config. I'm then going to create an authentication context, and this is coming from the Azure Active Directory authentication library. I'm going to pass in the authority, and I'm also going to pass in a token cache. Now the token cache is going to be used by the ADAL library to keep track of the different tokens that we've acquired from Azure AD, so we don't have to go back and get them if they are not expired. We're then going to create a new discovery client. This is using the discovery service in Office 365. I'm going to create that by passing in the endpoint for the discovery service, which is a well-known URI. And then I'm going to go pass in the access token. Now, to get the access token, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go call the authorization context method acquire token silent async. Now, what that's going to do is I'm going to pass in the ID, the credentials, and the identifier for the discovery service and the current user. This is going to reach into our token cache, and it's going to try and find a token that is not expired for use to authenticate. If we don't have one, it'll handle it by going out to Azure AD to go acquire that token on the fly. Once it gets it, it will then return the client, the access token, to the discovery client. So now that I have got a discovery client built up, I can then query it and say discovery.discover capability async. And in this case here, I'm looking for the calendar. I might be also be wanting to look for the contact. Once I've done that and I have a discovery result, that discovery result is going to have one key property that I'm interested in, and that's the resource ID. It's also going to have the resource endpoint for the service that I'm actually queried for. So at the very end, I'm going to create a new instance of my Outlook services client, passing in the endpoint for the service that I want to talk to. In the case of this code snippet here, it's the calendar, but I also would want it also works for the contacts. And then what I would do is I need to go get another access token for that endpoint. So instead of just getting one for just the discovery service, I need two different access tokens, one for the discovery service and one for the actual endpoint that I want to talk to. Here I'm using the same method, acquire token silent async, passing in the resource ID of the discovery of the resource that I obtained from the discovery service and using the same credentials and user identifier. And then I pass back the access token. So once I've created an instance of the Outlook services client, I then can actually interact with the data inside of it. So here it has a property called me. And so what you see here is I've gone and called the method ensure client created. That's what I showed you on the previous slide, to create an instance of my Outlook services client. I then, if we're interested in the contact piece, you see, look at the very last two lines. I'm calling Microsoft.Office365.OutlookServices.iContact to get a reference of a contact here. And I'm going to use the Outlook services client by saying client.me.contacts, getting a contact by a specific ID, and then I'll say execute that asynchronously. So it will then go fetch that contact record. So how do I retrieve these contacts? Well, here you see on the left-hand side, what I've done is I've gone and created a internal object I call my contact. It's got a first name, a last name, a company, a work phone, a home phone, and an email address property. On the right-hand side, I've got a method that I've created called getContact with some paging information at the being passed in, both the index of the page you're currently on and the size of the page that you're requesting. I'm going to acquire an Office 365 client to retrieve the contacts. So I'm going to call ensure client created, and then I'm going to say client.me.contacts, and I'm going to use a link expression to get my contacts back. So I'll say order by the surname, the last name, that's going to be an ascending order. I'm going to then say skip to the desired page. So I'm going to do that by looking at the size of the page and multiplying that by the page that I'm on. And then I'm going to say only take the number of records that you're interested in and then execute asynchronously. So that will only get the records that I'm looking for. There's another property that's returned on the results called more pages available. And what more pages available is that's just going to be a Boolean value to say, is there more data than what we actually obtained? In the code snippet here, you see that this doesn't have any kind of a declaration to it. That's because this is actually defined as a global variable for the class that we're in. This is just a snippet of the one method. Now that I got the data back from the Office 365 API, I'm going to convert the data over to my internal object, my contact object, or more specifically, a list of those, because that's what I want to be able to bind to in my views. In this case here, I'm using it inside of a MVC application, an ASP.NET MVC application. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to loop through all of the results. I'm going to look at the current page of data that came back. And for each contact, I'm going to create a list of contacts by adding in each one. You'll see that some of the fields like business phone and home phone and email address have some interesting characteristics to them. For instance, the email address property that comes back from Office 365 actually has multiple pieces to it. There's an address property and a title or name property, and that's where you can actually have a description for what should show up when you write this email. So sometimes you see emails written out as the person's name and then two greater than and less than brackets with the email address inside of it, or you may see it referred to as different ways. This is how you can actually give a label to the actual email address. So let's take a look at a demo and creating an MVC project that uses the Connected Service Wizard. In this demo, I want to show you how to add a connected service to an existing ASP.NET MVC project. What I'm going to do is go to my project, and I'm going to right-click and say Add a Connected Service. I'm already authenticated with my Azure AD tenant, so I can just go ahead and click on Register App, and it will create an app in Azure AD. I'm going to modify the properties for this app to make sure it's a single tenant app and that it's only going to respond on an HTTPS endpoint. I'm then going to come over to the groups, and I'm going to grant this app access to sign the user in and read the profile. And then I'm also going to go modify for contacts and say it can read and write and read my contacts. And I'll click OK. Visual Studio will now add new Git packages to add references to the Office 365 Discovery Service and Outlook Services service. You can see those here. Now that we've gone and created this reference, let's go ahead and go check our web config. And ensure that it got set the correct values. And sure enough, it did. We have a client ID for our app, a password, the authorization URI, and the Azure AD tenant ID as well set. So now we're in good shape to start working with our application. So what about paging support? Do we have paging support in the Office 365 APIs? We absolutely do. What we want to do is we want to be able to limit the number of items returned to our query. Now the way you're going to do this is by using the take and the skip methods prior to the execute async method. If you call execute async before take and skip, then you're going to be getting all the data and it coming back to your application from Office 365. And then you're going to be doing the filtering and the skipping to get just a specific page. And that's not efficient. You want to make sure the paging portion happens on the server side for Office 365. So here you can see I'm calling on my get contacts. I'm calling skip to go skip to the certain record that we're looking for. And then in this case here, I'm just saying jump ahead to the current page we're looking, the current page of information we want, which would be the current page we're on times the number of items per page. And then I would say take the page size. And again, the more pages available property is going to reflect if we have more data that's available to us after our take command. So let's examine the paging support with the Outlook Services client. Now the first thing we want to do is let's take a look at how we can query for contacts in our Exchange mailbox. Over on my controllers, I have a controller here called Contact Controller. This one has an index action that will list all of the contacts inside of my contact folder in Exchange. You see here that it's set up with an authorize attribute to make sure we're authenticated. Now I want to be able to support paging. So what I've done is I have a repository that I've created that you can see listed up here called My Contact Repository. We'll look at that in a moment. I'm going to be getting back all of my contacts, and this is going to give me back a collection of contacts. Notice it's giving me back a collection of objects called My Contact. This is an internal object that I've created that we're going to use for our views in our MVC application. Notice I'm also passing in the page that we're on and page size that we're looking for. It also has a public property here called More Pages Available to tell me if I have additional pages of data available that I did not get. So let's go take a look at the repository. Here this repository has a public property called More Pages Available. We saw how we were using that a minute ago. Then I have a method called getContacts, and I'm passing in an index and a page size. What I'm going to do first is get an instance of the Outlook Services client. And as I showed you in the slides, there's a method that I copy and paste to almost all my projects called Ensure Client Created. And what that does is it simply uses the discovery service. It first fetches a access token and then queries the discovery service using that access token to obtain the endpoint and resource ID for the contact's endpoint. I then go get an access token for that endpoint that I can then use to create an Outlook Services client. Now I'm going to use the client to look at my contact, so I say me.contacts, and I want to sort by their last name in ascending order. To just execute the query, I could call execute async, but notice I'm using the skip and the take operators as well. Skip is going to say skip a certain amount of records that would normally come back from the result set, and then only take a certain number of records. So if I was on page 4 and my page size was 10 items per page, this would skip the first 40 records in the result set, and then it would take the next 10 records for my page size. It does all of that, though, on the Office 365 servers. It's not something that I have to manage. Next, you can see I'm going to walk through the current page of data that came back, and I'm going to convert the objects that I got back from Office 365, which are just eye contact records, and I'm going to convert them to records that I can use or objects I can use in my view, and then I'm going to return that list back. When I want to get just a single item, I'm going to use the same kind of method, except instead of doing a full query, I'll just go to the client.me.contacts and use the get by ID method to get a specific contact back. And then everything else is essentially the same. Now, another thing that we can do is we can batch some requests up using the REST API. REST is more chatty than the CSOM API that we have. Each action is sent as a separate request. So the CSOM allows for multiple requests to be sent as one. REST requests can be expensive and slow down your application. If you're making multiple round trips to the server, it can really slow things down. Office 365 REST APIs shipped with some support for the REST APIs. Batching requests with REST support was added to SharePoint Online in late 2014. You can send multiple read and write operations in one HTTP request using the batching. Now, it is worth noting that SharePoint 2013 on-premises does not support batching at this time of the recording. So let's explore the impact of what batching can do. What you see here is that I have a bunch of requests that are happening at the very top. So what you see here is that, say, for the first three sessions, so we see here on the top left, sessions 1, 2, and 3, that's creating two items, and then the third one is requesting all the items that are inside the list, sorted by their title. The exact same thing can be done as a batch. Instead of making three round trips to the server, I can make one round trip to the server. So session number 24 at the bottom, when I make that request, I actually am going to include those two creates and the get operation inside that one session on line 24. So you can see it's going to definitely speed things up, because I don't have to issue a request and wait for a response. I can just do one request and response. Same thing is true if I'm going to want to do deletes. So in this case here, when I want to do a delete, each delete operation with REST is an individual atomic request. So here at the top, I've got between sessions 16 and 22, I'm creating six individual requests to delete six individual items from this list, and then getting a list of the results of all the items in the list on session number 22. However, if I look at session number 28 at the bottom, I can include all six of those deletes and the get at the very end. The way this works is that you have a thing called a batch request. So the batch request is one single object, right? It's one single string, one single bit of text. This is going to contain any get operations, but it's also going to include any change set operations. And change sets are non-HTTP get operations, like posts, patches, and deletes. You'll also get a batch response. And the response object is going to have multiple responses. You'll have a change set response for each change set that you submitted, and they'll all come back in the same order that you submitted them, as well as the get response. Now, what about create, read, update, and delete support for working with specific entities? The way you're going to get a specific contact is by using the getByID method and passing in the GUID or the ID of that contact. And you can see there from that one snippet that I have on the screen. The way you're going to delete a contact is by calling deleteAsync after you've obtained the object. So you see here at the bottom snippet that after I've created the client, I then am going to go get a specific item, and then I call contact.deleteAsync to delete the item asynchronously. You can add an entity by calling the addContactAsync on the contacts collection. So here you'll see at the top is I'm creating a new contact record by creating a new instance of the contact object from the Outlook services namespace. And I'm passing in the given name, the surname, and the company name. I'm then going to create an email address, which is also a specific kind of an object in the Outlook services namespace. Here I'm passing in the address and the name. As for phone numbers are collections of strings. So here I'm going to go to the home phones and add a home phone to the actual collection, and the same thing with business phones. Mobile phones are interesting in that they have a mobile phone one property, and there's no option for multiple mobile phones. You just have one, or the API assumes you only have one. And then you're going to create the contact by saying client.me.contacts.addContactAsync and pass in that object. So let's look at update operations with the Outlook services client. In this last demo, I want to show you how to update and delete contacts. So here I'm in my controller again. Let me scroll down and show you my delete function. All my delete function does is it calls the repository's delete contact, passing in an ID. Creating does the same thing. For a HTTP post, when I'm submitting a contact, I'm getting my contact back right here, and then I'm passing it in. Looks like I've misspelled it. That's okay, just it's still the variable name being passed in. If I look at my repository here and I go down to the delete contact, what I'm doing is I'm first getting an instance of the contact and then I'm going to delete it. Adding a contact works the same way as the other options for working with calendar and mail. I'm going to first go get an instance of my Outlook services client. That's the first thing we need. I'm then going to create a new contact by creating a contact from the Outlook services namespace, setting the given name, surname, and company name. Email addresses, as I've discussed before, are a little more complicated because I have to create an email address object that contains both an address and a name property. Phone numbers and business phones are actually collections of strings, so I'm going to go ahead and stuff those into those collections. Once I've done that, I'm then going to say update the contacts collection by adding a contact asynchronously and passing in that contact. And that's how we add contacts to our contact list in Exchange. Now, in addition to what I've shown you so far, which is using the .NET SDK for Office 365, we can also work directly with REST. The way you're going to do this is by using the different endpoints that we have. So specifically for contacts, you see at the very bottom, I can make direct calls to outlook.office365.com/api/v1.0/me/contacts. And if I pass in parentheses, I can pass in the ID of a contact to get a specific contact back. This is going to be useful if you're not working with something like, say, .NET, or you're working with another technology that does not have the SDK, or the SDK is not available. How do you read entities using REST? You're going to use an HTTP GET request on a collection or an entity endpoint. The Exchange API is only going to return JSON responses, and paging can be accomplished using the OData operators skip and top. One thing that you'll see here is that right in the middle of the slide, you'll see a section where I'm creating an HTTP request message. Notice here that on the third line, we're specifying an authorization header. This is something that's taken care of for you by the Office 365 Outlook services client. When we're working with the .NET SDK, but when we're doing this with REST, we're going to have to authenticate. And so I've gone and gotten an access token, and I'm passing that in to the authorization header using the value bearer space and then the access token. The code here is actually taking a JSON response that I got, converting it over to XML, and then using the link to XML to read the data back out. To create a new entity, one thing you're going to have to keep in mind is you have to specify the type property on your object. So here what you see is I've gone in and I've created a new object, just using a JSON builder or string builder to build up a JSON object. And then I'm specifying the data that I'm passing across using the request.content property. And then I'm also passing in the headers and the content for the content type of the data I'm submitting across, which is application/JSON. How do we delete entities? Well, you simply point to the endpoint of the specific entity itself, and then you issue an HTTP delete. And you can see that there on the where I'm creating an instance of the HTTP request message, that the method I'm passing in is a delete. And again, you have to make sure you pass in the authorization header. In this module, we did an overview of the Office 365 API for contacts. We looked at connected services, paging support, batching support, CRUD support, and some of the operations that we can do using the REST API. Microsoft offers multiple ways to get in touch with them and also to stay up to date on what's going on. One of the things is the Developer Program Watch. What the Developer Program is all about is allowing you to sign up and get email newsletters, free developer subscription to Office 365, which will give you a 1 year free to a Office 365 tenant, free training, free tools, and free webinars that they'll publish on a periodic basis. Using this developer program, you'll be able to stay in touch and up to date with all the latest and greatest offers and news and updates coming out of Office 365 and Office development. You can sign up for it at dev.office.com/devprogram. The Office team also provides multiple ways for you to sign up and to stay in touch with what's going on. From the Office 365 network and Yammer, to staying in touch on Twitter using the Office Dev handle, you can also ask questions on Stack Overflow using the tag ms-office. We have multiple podcasts as well. If you go to dev.office.com to sign up for different podcasts, such as the Office 365 Developer Podcasts. In Channel 9, there's a developer show as well, the Office 365 Developer Show that comes out on a weekly basis. You can also find out about a bunch of different tiny, little quick snack demos of quick demos. You can find those at YouTube if you go to aka.ms/0365devsnackdemos. And then finally, do you have feedback for the team? Do you have ideas for new features? Do you have changes that you'd like to see implemented? Submit them on User Voice by going to officespdev.uservoice.com, where you can submit your ideas, and then you can also vote on other people's ideas and provide comments to the team. The engineering team looks at these issues on a periodic basis and a regular periodic basis and triages them to look to improve them and add things to the product going forward. Thank you very much for taking a few minutes of your time to watch this screencast.